Hello, guys. Francisco from Neural DSP here. Finally, we got back the podcast. People were asking for it, so here it is. So today we are with Chris Rakestraw. How are you, man?
I'm excellent. Just woke up about an hour ago and have a little bit of time before I have to work today, so I'm happy to do the podcast.
Okay, awesome. You're in the US, right?
Yeah, I live in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right. And that's where you work also, or you have your studio somewhere else, or how do you go?
No, I don't want to run a studio anymore. I did that in LA for like 7 years and absolutely just grinded to make rent every month. So I don't have a commercial studio anymore. I just have a home set up that I do in between whatever normal projects I'm working on. Because most oftentimes I end up in a studio anyway. So I find it doesn't make sense to have a place anymore. But I have a home rig that I have. I'm currently in my basement right now because I'm renovating that room, but that'll be set up soon. So,
oh, that's cool. You have a basement. That's actually useful for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. Keep the cats and everyone upstairs. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Take the drums downstairs and you're good to go. Like the old times. Oh, nice. Yeah, but that's true. Like most people don't have a physical place anymore. Like I have a friend that also had a big studio and now he just doesn't have a place anymore. And it's fine. He just rents something when he needs. And is that the way you go or?
Yeah. 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 Usually normal way a project is I do the big stuff where I have to. And then everything else I do where I have to because of budget. So if it's, if it's a big project, we do it all in a big studio or whatever. And if it's a small project, you know, a couple of days of drums in a real place. And then wherever we can do the rest. I mean, that's the reality of how it goes now. So,
yeah, the industry has changed quite a lot. So, like, for people that don't know you, can you introduce yourself a bit? Like, how did you start or what have you done? Like, just brief introduction so people know who you are.
Yeah, sure. I've been making records since about 2000 or 99. So I guess close to 20 years. I ran a studio in LA. Let me start before that. I grew up in the large format studio kind of environment, an assistant working on SSLs, that whole thing, runners around, things like that. Found some people I enjoyed working with, worked with them for a long time. And at some point was able to build a facility out in LA, ran that for 7 years making records. And then I found, what's funny is back when I did that, I built a studio thinking that, now if I just have a studio, I can take every project I want and have a place to do it. And I don't have to worry about, formatting a budget for all that. And it turned out to be almost the opposite of like, hey, now you have a studio. Now you have to take every project to pay rent every day. And it was crazy how I ended up like cleaning toilets and making coffees. It was like taking a step back in my career by opening up my own studio. Cause you have to do all the engineering and the cleaning and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
So after a certain amount of time, my studio shut down, and I thought it was the worst thing in the world at the moment. And then about a month later, I realized I was like, "This is the best thing that's ever happened to me." I hated owning a studio.
too much.
Yeah, for real. When you got used to the grind, where you're like, your whole life is just hustling, and then when it's over, you're just like, what was I doing? That was crazy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
After that, I moved to Nashville, and that's when I met Dave from Megadeth, and I've kind of been working with him, not discreetly since then, but he's been the lion's share of my work lately. Still travel to LA to work sometimes and, wherever else. But yeah, that's where I'm at right now. And as far as work, I don't want to say I'm just a metal guy because I know every one of us hate to be pigeonholed into a certain area. But, I grew up doing a lot of rap. That was like the first, quarter of my career. But, a lot of large format facilities were like that. And transition into the heavier rock stuff. And, I kind of do a lot of that now. So,
cool. Yeah, it's interesting what you said that once you once you have to pay the rent for a big space and you put a lot of money on materials and treatment and all the planning and loans, then you gotta pay all that back.
Yep.
So you took, of course, like every customer, you cannot filter that much. You have to work on pretty much in every project that comes to you unless you have space to choose, but you know, yeah, reality is different. So, but it's interesting that what you said, that the big format studios, like, were used to a different dynamic of working with different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. how was your experience, for example, between those old days on, like, for example, facing different styles on the fly, rather than, for example, having knowing what kind of customer is going to come to you on Metal World, or like you kind of know in advance instead of like ringing the bell, like, hey, we come to record tomorrow or something like that.
Right. Well, back then, I mean, I was doing a lot of assisting early on. And then, you know, after that, you're just engineering whoever the studio owner would call you for. This is before I opened up my place, I think, what you're asking about. I don't know. To be perfectly honest is, you know, I sucked at stuff back then. So I was just trying to, I was just trying to make the fucking microphone do something, you know? And at that point, you're just like, is everybody buying my bullshit? All right, cool. Let's keep recording. You know, because at that point you're selling a stranger that what button makes the reverb happen. You know, I know it sounds silly, but that's absolutely how I felt early on. And then after ruining records for like, 5 or 6 years, you finally figure out which way to point the microphone. And after that, you get a little more confidence and you're not worried about like all the technical stuff, so then you can just work with the person and concentrate on, getting the people what they want, which is, you know, more important to me than what I want sometimes. I say sometimes, because it's not always,
it's a big learning curve, right? Like, I mean, everybody starts fucking it up. It's just the way it is.
Yeah,
and I think that it's the best way to learn.
You just said a mouthful. The whole thing, this whole stupid career is an entire learning curve from the beginning. And you don't realize that until you get into it. And, you know, first couple of years, you're like, oh, I know what's going on. I could do automation on an SSL. And then like 10 years later, you listen back to that mix you automated on that big SSL. And you're like, I'm a fucking idiot. Like, how was I buying into this shit? And now... Even like I just turned 40 this past month ago, and even now I'm still listening to stuff I did 2 years ago. I'm like, oh my god, I'm still growing, and
that never ends.
Recording school doesn't want to tell you. Recording school is the biggest bullshit hustle in the entire industry, and I'll say that to everyone. They like, hey, give us 18 grand, and we'll teach you how to make this SM57 do whatever. It's like, bullshit. you're gonna teach me how to pay back school loans for 10 years.
Oh my god. Yeah, well, I have a lot of like cons that I can find about the my music school. Like, definitely that's one. But I would say that, for example, in my case, I would have loved to learn more, like, now that I'm working on like designing products for music producers and musicians. Mm-hmm. I had to learn a lot about like what's happening behind the scene and all much more technical stuff, like I don't know, like all the linear phase EQing and all the oversampling stuff, and things that when I was studying, I think that nobody really mentioned that much. It was like too artistic, like, yeah, you just put the mic there like 2 inches and that's it. That, yeah, but there's like physics happening.
Like, sure, but even, right, in recording school, I feel like that's just like a couple days of like, yeah, there's something called linear phase. You'll learn about it once you can actually hear it. Ooh, because there's what they don't tell you either is you can't learn until your ear is developed. And, everyone like,
true,
in their early days of your recording, everyone's jerking off to compression and what EQ. And they're like, yeah, it's like, you're turning that fucking knob and it's bypassed. That's how good your fucking ears are.
Yeah, exactly,
you know? And when I'm making fun of someone, I'm making fun of myself. Cause I totally remember being like, yeah, I know exactly what's going on in recording school. And you're like, I learned how to use a compressor today. And then you're like, you didn't learn bypassed shit. You got it to like not mute on accident. That's like, and that's the truth. Like, think about it when you get in your car. You're like, you have like the high and low EQ on your car stereo. And like a dullard can go in and hear that. Yeah, cool. But then what if you get a car that's got high mids, low mids, you know, subs,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
At some point people stop being able to hear that until time goes on and your ears develop. So that's, I don't know. That's a thing too about learning.
Yeah, that's true. Curve. That's true. There's so many like perspectives to the learning curve that I think that, well, first of all, a school can never promise that you will be ready when exactly when you're out of it.
Yeah.
It's first of all, like no way. But then again, I feel that my school, I would have loved it to be a little bit more technical instead of like leaving everything to the, you know, learn while doing and not really like measuring that. As you say, like sure, I can place the SM57 like 2 inches away from the speaker. And if I put it like 4 inches away of the speaker, it's also right. But do you have in your mind like the change that it's going to produce? So that's like... Well, it's just years of experience, as you said. Like you learn by fucking it up. I don't know.
Yeah, and the one more thing I'll add to this before, you know, I'm sure we're ad infinitum on this boring subject. The truth is you don't have time to fiddle fuck around with that shit when you're in it. Later in your career, someone pays for you to stay there all day and get guitar tones. You know, like Deftones, perfect example. We're gonna go so deep and trying out every single mic. In the whole place, you know, cool. But most 99% of sessions are going to be like, stick that shit up there, make it sound good. And because you don't have time to experiment on someone else's dime all the time. And so that's a thing too, where you just gotta do it long enough to get good at it. And you can't do that in school is my point.
yeah, exactly. And take the right decision in a matter of seconds. Like, okay, you have 1 minute to put the mic there. Or okay, let's say 5 or 10. But you gotta do it right. Like once you are back in the console in control room, like you're not gonna go back and send your assistants like 10 times to change the mic positions. Yeah. Like, does this guy know what the fuck he's doing?
And also until you've like done a lot of bad guitars and a lot of good guitars and just a lot of stuff, you don't know what, like you'll hear a mic and you'll look around the room and be like, I guess it's better, you know. But until you've really truly and there's this stress that comes with finishing a record and it's put out and you get to hear your finished tones that you can't fuck with anymore. You're like, that's what the record sounds like. That's when you look back on all the decisions you made through a record. And you're like, okay, that's how those things turned out. But to me, it's always hard to be in the control room and trying a bunch of new shit out and being like, this is definitely their answer. Cause how many times do we come back the next day and be like, the fuck was I doing? That sounds like a marshmallow covered in peanut butter. That's horrible.
But yeah, options are overwhelming. And I think that, do you think that like, because like you started as an assistant working in a, like probably an analog system and like where decisions were being made on the fly and there was no way back, or at least not instantly. And do you think that that has helped you on how to approach like the digital era where everything can be changed until the last minute? Because I always ask this question for like all the podcasts guests that we have had, and it's very interesting to know.
I see. You're talking about either a system of necessity that crafted my thought process, or was it a choice? I think committal comes from... knowing what you're doing, whether it's analog or digital. I don't think analog or digital is the answer to your question, believe it or not. I think it's from, because how many times have you gotten an analog take and it's got, you know, 4 different tracks of bass sounds on it and it happens to be an analog tape? You know what I mean? Like that shit doesn't matter at all. And on the flip side of what you're saying, let's say... you get like early, like we were dumping early Danzig tapes at one point, the old analog stuff. And you could hear 8 tracks of drums, which are more of that committal thing you're talking about, which might have been from necessity. But who knows if there was a 24 track before they mixed down to that 8 that had a million mics on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so exactly.
I don't necessarily think the format dictates decision making. I think the cat doing the shit, knowing what he's doing, dictates decision making. And again, that only comes from experience and ruining records for a long time. You know, because you don't know how far you can stretch your creative space. How do I phrase this? You don't want to commit to something that's going to limit you later, but you want to have confidence that you're not jerking off and doing a bunch of bullshit that's not going to be used. Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
But that's a difficult balance. That's actually a very hard
balance. If you don't know what you're doing, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And a lot of times that shit you were talking about too is humoring the client and being open-minded to changes and things you're not used to. And that's a big, let me chime in on that. I know you didn't ask about this right now, but
go ahead.
I'm going to chime in on this shit anyway. A lot of times being open-minded to A, what the artist wants, because how many times have we been in there and be like, that's going to be fucking stupid. And you're like, all right, let's do it. And then it ends up being good. And you're glad you didn't go, your fucking idea sucks, because you would have looked like an asshole. But so many times I've been in a room and I have, you have to have confidence even to even walk into a fucking studio, whether you're the drummer, bass player, producer, engineer, or assistant. You know, we all have to believe we're supposed to be there. So you get this confidence sometime where you're like, I know exactly what to do everywhere. And I think it's good to shake that sometimes, be like, I don't know fucking everything. Let's allow some chaos to happen. Let's take some of your bad ideas, because they might turn out to be good. And I find myself
lucky accidents, or who knows?
Yeah. And if you don't have that mindset, you're always going to be in control, and you're never going to have anything that's just allows you to grow in your career, because that's all we want to do. We all just want to get better at this shit.
Yeah, and the learning curve, as we mentioned in the beginning, it never stops. So you gotta be open to keep learning.
Yeah.
So even if the person doesn't have the same background than you, they might surprise you, and you never know when.
Yeah,
so,
and the flip side of that is when ideas start derailing your world, and then you gotta crush a motherfucker just to, like, you know, you gotta drop a Nagasaki bomb on someone to get on.
There's a limit.
Fucking session.
There's a limit.
Exactly. Yeah. It's usually pretty obvious too, you know. Yeah. So not to be a jerk or anything.
Yeah, but that's cool, man. Like, nice. So do you know, for example, like any music? Do you play any musical instruments or?
Yeah, I play bass. I played a lot more when I was younger. And then, as everybody knows, once you start kind of getting into this stuff, you end up, I ended up taking an intro to music studio. It was like a MIDI course, like keyboards and programming, on like an old Orange Apple. And anyway, I did that, and some cat told me about the recording workshop in LA. I was like, oh, that's cool. Because the thing is, when I was in bands before, I tended to be like the guy that was like, just out of default, not that I thought I was doing anything, just was like, oh, that's a cool part. Let's do this to this, I wasn't always the guy that could like shred hard or anything, but organizationally.
Building the structure of the songs or so.
Yeah. And like I don't know why it was just naturally that way. So I had done so many different jobs until then. And then I finally did that. This is the only thing I've been able to stick with. So I don't know. I guess it finally naturally happened. So I guess it's more the answer.
Yeah, we were also talking before, I just keep thinking about what we talked in the minute, because it's so interesting. That you don't have the time at school, that you said you don't have the time at school to try 1,000 mic positions probably. But if you wouldn't go to school, like, or at least like to music school, you would be studying something else, and then it's like time lost, right? So you rather do it like maybe not studying in a music school, but you gotta start learning early, because if you like, nothing will assure that you can get into this business if you don't do it. That's my point. Like, it doesn't matter if you go to like engineering school or music school, just sit down and do it. Because like the learning curve starts pretty early and it ends quite late. So it doesn't really matter.
Advancing the learning curve, I think, is the point I'm going to draw from your question, is at some point you got to start it. Yeah, I get it. And the sooner you get off the crutch of someone having to teach you, you're going to advance your learning curve greatly.
Yeah.
You can go to school and have some guy, that's probably done cool records, tell you what to do. But until you get out there and fuck it up and hear all the decisions that every time you make a decision, how it affects your work, that's the only way. And the only way to work is to like meet people that want to hire you, or buy a laptop and start recording. But I don't even know how to, I would hate to begin right now. I'll tell you that. And maybe school is the place to begin at this age, meaning the age of not large format studios. Man, it's weird. I don't even know how they're selling this shit. Because if you're starting it's out hard, now, right? You're going to be on a laptop
exactly.
recording your friend's band. You're not going to use an SSL probably ever.
No.
You'll get a plug-in, and be able to use it that way. But I don't know, man. I just become aware of that I have no idea what to do these days.
Bedroom producers are the biggest part of the industry right now. I mean, like, everybody starts like that, and everybody has to buy a DAW, an interface.
Take
and
your fucking money, buy a laptop, buy a interface.
And probably you already have one. Like, you need one anyway.
Just borrow your uncle's, because he's probably fucking got one too at this point. but yeah, man, I don't know. And to be honest, I guess my last point on this was, for me, as a guy who has the opportunity to hire people every once in a while, I hire the fucking people that are cool, and I'll teach them what I want them to know. That's happened a couple times here in Nashville, where I just need, like, mix prep, and I'll teach someone. I'll be like, this is how you do, you know, MIDI, this is how you do this. And by the end of the week, they're awesome at it, and they do it exactly how I want, and they're cool, and I get to hang out with them. And that's a big part of it too, because there's so many people that, like, yeah, you could edit drums and be amazing, but you're a pain in my ass, and you're, you know, I'd rather hire the dumbass that's cool, you know?
Yeah, I think that it's hard to work with people, especially for us, like, engineer lockdown monsters that are not used to socialize that much. So somebody's annoying in the studio you have to be there for 20 hours with that person. It's a little bit stressing.
I'd rather an assistant that, you know, cracks me up when I'm stressing out, rather than one that, you know, doesn't forget to flip the phase on the bottom snare.
yeah, exactly. Good job point. But yeah, like, which one do you think it was the inflection on your career when you said, like, okay, I can actually fucking do this. I can actually mix an album and earn money from it. Maybe I can make a living. Because first you were, like, doing some assistant work, and then you put your own studio. So there was some inflection there that you told to yourself,
I know exactly what triggered it. At some point, everybody in this industry that starts in larger format studios, not the bedroom guys, goes from the traditional assistant role to engineer. That day for me was, I saw Danzig's name up on the board in the office at Paramount, and I was like, guys, you got to put me on that session. And they're like, Mike and Adam over at Paramount, they're the owners there. They're like, I don't know, are you ready? You know, is your assisting, blah, blah. I was like, come on, put me on the fucking session. So they put me on. We work with Glenn, and Glenn's like, you want to do my record? And at that point, I was an engineer. And at that point, I didn't have to take the assistant jobs anymore, and I could receive calls for engineering. So at that point, you're like, okay, give me all the engineering work you can. And so when you ask, like, was there a moment, it's like, yeah, as soon as I'm an engineer, this is how it goes.
Please, can everyone?
yeah. It's like everyone's career, there's a certain moment where there's no one else in the room hitting space bar, and you're the only person there. You're like, oh, guess I'm fucking engineering. it's like, it's no big plan. It's just like one day you look around, you're like, there's nobody else in here.
Yeah. But that's cool, man. That's awesome. So you started, like, with what type of music was that first album that you recorded, like, that you had to do everything by yourself and you were leading the project?
It was probably Danzig. He was producing all that stuff. I was just engineering all that stuff. But I think Danzig was, like, the first, like, real engineering. There could have been a couple, like, no name, who knows, you know, coffee table coaster records that I made, but I don't remember any of those. But Danzig. And then from then on, it was just whatever other band. When I opened my studio, I was working with a guy named Matt Hyde that would bring a lot of projects there. And, I did a lot of his records. I don't know how much to say about that. I'm always bad with, like, thinking about client names.
After we talk,
I always remember, like, 20 guys I should have said.
And what part of the, like, because you mentioned that when you were a kid, you, like, the arranging songs, or, like, maybe songwriting even, was, like, felt natural. Like, in the process of your productions, I don't know, like, what part you enjoy the most? Are you mostly engineering or pre-production? You'll enjoy.
Okay. I see where you're getting at. So when I produce a record, there's easy stuff for me. The easy stuff is making the record. You know, it's like, get the snare sounds, get cool guitar sounds, you know, figure out how to do it. That's cool. The fun part and the most creative part is you get into pre-production, you take a look at everyone's music that they brought to you, and you see, okay, what can we do? Where can we make this stuff awesome? Where can we call some shit, you know, make everything fun, pick out what doesn't work. And that, for me, it's like problem solving at that point. It's like, hey, why does this vocal melody suck? Why is this cadence lame? You know, how can we make it better? Oh, this is great. Let's not fucking lose this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, that's the big part. You know, I started out with such a traditional assistant and engineering background that part is not the hard part for me. The part for me is like making the content awesome. And if you make the content awesome, and what I mean when I say make the content awesome is the actual songwriting, yeah, choice of melodies, rhythms, all that stuff, and the parts.
Yeah.
And then, okay, here's a great example. Led Zeppelin, okay? I'm reluctant to fucking throw that name out because it's so generic, but okay, guitar sound. The fucking tinniest bumblebee guitar sound ever. The most washed out, frumpy bass sound, right? Great drums. Everybody knows that, and the guy can sing or whatever. But if you break this down, if they weren't Led Zeppelin, they were just some fucking dickheads that you never heard of, and somebody played you like the soloed guitar, you'd be like, that guitar sounds terrible. Yeah, it sounds so buzzy. And then, but you put it in the big picture with a cool song, you're like, I don't give a fuck about the guitar sound. This is
exactly
awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Another example. Early Danzig stuff, okay? I've been through all those tapes, and I got to solo everything. And you hear the bass, you're like, same thing. It's like muddy bass with no top end. And guitars, like John Christ guitars, they're like reverbed out and thin. And you're like, these by themselves, this sounds terrible. Then you listen to a Danzig song of like, and you're like, this is great because the songs are awesome,
yeah,
you know? And so that's what I mean. Important. When I say I don't rely so much on the sounds because I know I can do that stuff, but does the content make it so the sounds come across easily? That's where I think about stuff.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. I think that like a great song is the beginning of every beginning, and it's just something very important. And I also enjoy quite a lot to do that. I don't get to do that anymore that much, but I really, really enjoyed that when somebody brought like some nice songs and all the energy, mm-hmm, to record an album. And it's like, hey, wait a second. Let's go first through the songs, like play them all together. And it's like, how many are you in a band? We're five. Okay, so who is leading the band? Okay, the singer and the guitar player. Okay, make the song just the two of you. If you can make it work with the guitar, then it works. And it's like, fuck, I don't know. How do we do it? There's a bass part here. I don't know. Play the bass line with the fifth string or sixth string. I don't know. Just make the intro and then go with full chords, triads. I don't need more than triads just to understand it, you know? So it's like, go ahead. And then you just start fixing. It's so fun.
It's everything that can make your job simple later. And then later on, you can go down like, let's break out the pedal bucket. Let's go as deep as we want with all that. Because whatever we're going to do, I don't have fear that it's going to be shitty. We're relying on some guitar pedal to carry the song.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. That's extremely fun, actually. Like, and then, as you said, it comes really easy to craft the sound afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you just made my point more than anything. Everything gets easier if you just start cool. So it's like building a house. Same thing.
Do you also get into the lyrics, or is it just more the structure type of things?
Man, I shouldn't say this out loud, but that's where I default to the artist. I fucking suck at lyrics. I'll tell you what I can. The one thing I like is helping an artist figure out how to fit lyrics in, because a lot of times. Someone wants to make a point that they care about and they don't want to leave lyrics out, but they also want to make it in a way that the accents don't turn up upside down, you know, like watermelon opposed to watermelon, you know, it's
exactly,
like, and things like that I can help with. But as far as saying, you know, I think you should say this in an artistic way. That's not my gig at all. But as far as the logistics of how the lyrics flow, that's what I can help with.
Yeah. So, do you think that, like for example, that you like to arrange the song on terms of parts? So it's pretty much kind of a arranging structure. Do you know some theory also to arrange chords, or you don't find it like it's you don't really use it, or do you do it also, or how's your perspective there?
I see where you're getting at. I know enough to hear. I hear when stuff is bad.
Yeah.
And then I'll default to the artist, like, let's work on this together and figure out how to fix it.
Okay. But you get your hands dirty there. Like, this doesn't work. Like, let's change the cards. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. I don't do it unless it needs to be done. I'm not one of those guys that has to, like, touch everything. But if I hear some funky stuff going on, I try and speak up. Because 9 times out of 10, the fucking bass player's on an A sharp or whatever, and this guy's actually been playing a B the whole time. And if someone doesn't speak up, be like, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah.
You know, you end up with a record that's got some, you know, whatever, half step outs, and they only go by for a second, but they're there forever.
It, so. Once you listen to music and you know how the record is supposed to sound, and you have this wrong chord, you can feel it right away. Like,
and another thing, and this is just default, but anybody who's been doing this for a while, I feel like your ears get so dialed to like what's in tune and what's not.
Yeah, that's true.
That stuff just sticks out as a sore thumb. Where, you know, someone with a younger palate of tones they hear, it might just gloss by.
Yeah. Are you picky about the gear stuff? Like, for example,
I am the last guy to walk around with a fucking Guitar Center catalog in my back pocket. I don't give a fuck. I care about certain things, like fundamental things.
Okay. Fundamentals.
Here's the thing. I care about fundamental things that help the whole project. Number one, the converters I use. I use Burl shit.
Yeah.
Fucking love that, because overall, it means I'm not going to have some whack shit later, okay?
Yeah.
Couple fundamental microphones that keep me from sounding like a bedroom guy.
Yeah.
Like, cool. Nothing against bedroom guys at all. I don't mean it that way, but a few fundamental things that matter. I give it, a few fundamental things. Can we just edit that out? A few fundamental things that matter, I care about. Everything else, I don't care about. Perfect example. I did a duet with Danzig and Hank 3, and we just used like whatever board preamps I was using. We had like these little lavalier. It was right when I opened my studio, so I had fuck all for microphones. Danzig saved for like an SM58, and it was just through a board preamp, and it sounded awesome at the end of the whole thing. Everything was like, holy crap, this is cool, and it sounds awesome. And it had nothing to do with the gear, because we were just scraping bottom of the barrel. And some of the best things I've ever recorded, if I told you what we use, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you know?
And the only last point to that is I've run through some of the most like jerk-off high-dollar gear on the planet and just been like, whatever. It means nothing to me. Like, content rules all, and that shit is just icing on the cake. So, I mean, yes, I know how to fucking use good gear, and I know how to get good tones out of it, but means nothing.
I know
like 8,000, there's like 20 guys who are like, well, not calling that guy now.
He uses 58 for the vocals, run away. It's the way it goes. Like, I was talking with two Madsen, I don't know, months ago already, when we did his podcast. He was like, fuck it, I ordered some Chinese microphones from AliExpress, and they turned to sound fucking great on specific things. And then he said, I ordered another one, and apparently the capsule was like, on that batch, was like a top-notch capsule that not even the Chinese knew about or something like that. And then the next batch sounded like shit. So it's the same fucking mic ordered from China, and one sounds great and the other one doesn't. But, you know, if you find some use for something, and since your ears are developed, which is the thing that we talked already before, if you're confident that you can use it for something, just go for it. Yeah. I mean, you don't need to spend €30,000 on a fucking diamond mic to.
And here's the thing: I'm always gonna call the bullshit. If I hear some gear that doesn't sound good, I'm gonna be honest and be like, "That's whack. Get it out of here and get something good." Yeah. That's as deep as I give a shit about. And I used to have this fear about like, oh, you walk into a studio, you don't know what they have. That goes away as soon as you know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
And so young people, whoever the fuck, if you're like, I gotta bring this rack to do everything, don't give a fuck. The biggest dicks in the world, and when I say that, I mean the most heavyweight mix engineers, producers that I ever worked with when I was younger, dude, they could crush with the least amount of shit ever.
Yeah.
And it's just, don't buy into the I gotta have everything. It ain't fucking true. You know, put your money in your fucking IRA at this point. Because you're going to be broke after a fucking couple of years of doing this.
Start saving. Yeah,
and I mean that with the absolute truth. I remember Neil Pogue, mixer that I assisted for a long time ago. You know, he'd work on an SSL and he'd show up. He had like two Alesis wedges, you know? And like any other guy would be laughed out of the room. He's like, two Alesis wedges and his mixes slam. Amazing. Yeah, yeah. Same thing, Andy Johns comes in. He's like, just give me a couple pull techs and a Neve compressor for the bus and I'm good. And it's like, he's like, you know, three pieces of outboard gear and he's like fucking crushing. So yeah, I don't know. I don't buy into that.
Just telling you some random stuff. I just ordered a new, like an Evertune bridge guitar. Like, fuck, I'm tired about tuning the guitars all the time when I'm recording. Like, what the fuck, man? It's crazy. I don't record even like 1% of the guitars that you record. And I'm already fed up with it. So.
It's funny you mentioned this. Just yesterday, I was like, can we just get an Evertune guitar? Because I was having so much trouble chasing a fixed bridge thing. But to be honest, I've never actually recorded with one, so I can't speak on if they work or not. From what I've heard, they do, and from what I've heard, they don't. So,
yeah, I mean, everybody has an opinion, you know. It's like, of course, but I find it fucking amazing. To be honest, cool. I really, really like it, and I have some like demo from, I don't know if you know this band. It's a Finnish band. It's Winter Sun, very, very specific genre.
Yeah. They're awesome.
Yeah, demo really just cool. left. He left because we started the podcast. I told him you want to stay, and it's like a little bit more of a shy guy, so I guess that, and I also had to go, but anyway, I asked him right away because he changed all his guitars, even the Ibanez that he had for years, he modified them to put Evertune bridges, and it's that's a little bit hardcore, like for someone that really loves guitars. It's like professional guitar player.
I need to get some of those just on it, strictly a ease of use thing, you know. How often do you lose, has the artist lost creativity because you're like, your fucking G-string.
Always the G-string, man. It's so
Maybe you've inspired me to drop some money on gear, just opposite of what I was talking about.
But the thing is, like, I think that, like, most of the, like, I think it's worth the sacrifice. Like, for example, a lot of people say, like, okay, you lose sustain or whatnot, then maybe the bendings are like not exactly as the other bridge, but it's not either with Floyd Rose or like any other stuff like that, so you just get used to the playing. But then the benefit that I see the most is that it's one thing to care, like one thing less to care about when you are like rather creating music and recording it right away or in a studio session, that there's so many variables, like so many things that can go wrong. And it's like, if you're worried about the tuning, then it's like you have to stop every fucking minute or every fucking take and tune again. It's like half the time saved right away. I think it's those things about technology sometimes are like no brainer for me.
We'll have to talk in like another year after I've bought a couple of those and put them through their paces and see what we think.
Yeah, let's see when mine arrives. But what I have tried, I really, really love them.
Who knows? Maybe Evertune will hear this and shoot me an email.
Yeah, sure. They should. were you in the NAMM show this year? No.
No, I've been in pre-pro with Mega, so I don't. I haven't done anything but that and try to fix my truck. That's about it.
Okay. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. It was quite hectic, but a lot of people came to see us. Like, have you tried our plugins so far? Yeah.
Yeah, you guys sent me this stuff. It's been really cool. I've absolutely used it. And I'm pretty sure you were really quick to answer all my emails, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem, man.
But yeah, love the Neural DSP stuff. In fact, you know, when we were talking about gear,
be honest, we're not pushing anyone to say anything.
I'm not going to jerk anybody around.
Yeah, that's cool.
You asked me about gear. I said, I only give a shit when it matters, right?
Yeah.
Your new plugin, what's the fucking bass? I'm totally farting on the bass name. Right,
it's the Darkless Ultra pedals.
Yeah, the B7K. Okay, so that thing is now like a go-to bass sound in my mixes now. Well, for aggressive stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Dude, I have a ton of plugins. It's not one crack. Everybody can quote me on that. I fucking hate cracks. And anybody that's using cracks,
don't do that stuff. Don't do it.
Because guys like this slave and build this stuff.
It takes actually a lot of work, guys. takes a lot of
I know.
And actually, so, I'm the dumbest dude in the office. If you would take a look at around the office, you would find very, very smart fucking engineers that actually do this stuff.
That's how I feel in every session I'm in. but I love the new Dart Glass plugin by you guys. You guys knocked it out of the park, and it's killer.
Thanks.
I use it like a real tool, and that's all I care about. So.
Awesome. Yeah, it all comes down to that, man. If you purchase something that you like, hopefully you're gonna end up using it, right? So
yeah,
like that's the best case scenario. So if it works for something, then go ahead.
I haven't been able to get into you guys' guitar plugin much yet. Yeah. I haven't needed it yet because fortunately that couple of things I've mixed have had decent guitars on them.
Yeah,
so.
Cool. Yeah, we got a lot of actually the bass plugin was the first one we did. And mm-hmm. we did it without a cap first, so it was like simpler to get it out. We were just learning on the curve, and then we updated it and released the real cabinet with the Dart Glass cabinet and all the mics and everything. That was a huge update for people, and they really, really liked it. And then we jumped to the big pool, you know, like fuck, let's do some guitar amps. Can we do it? Can we do it better? Can we do it better? Like, is there something that the rest are not doing that we can do? Okay,
right.
Let's try it out. And I think we nailed it. So people love it. People are like all the time, like sending messages or appreciating how the fuck did we do it? Like this sounds like a real fucking amp. And we were like in NAMP, we had this A/B testing with the real unit. So we had a real unit and the plugin. Let the real unit go to a reactive load box, and then reactive load box to the interface input, and then the guitar straight to the interface. And we were like, instantly A being running both through the same IR, so the same speaker. Mm-hmm. And dude, people were impressed. Like they couldn't believe how it feels, like how it actually reacts. And Dino Casares was with us. He was like, oh fuck, like I can tell you which one is which, but I don't know which one is the tube amp really if you don't tell me which one is it. Like I actually like more this one. Okay, that's the plugin. Okay, cool. Then let's keep it with that. Like, so it was, you know, it's fun.
That happens. I can't tell. I'm not going to tell you what session, but there have been sessions where we brought in all of this gear and then we're going to be like, we're going to use that. And it sounded better. And that's another reason because I know I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I will use what sounds the best. And that's if everybody's embarrassed of the name,
that's how it should
matter.
Be. That's how it should be all the time, man.
But and it's simple truth. If you turn the, you know, If you take the label off your Pro Tools track and play it back, use which one sounds better. It doesn't matter what's written on the box.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, maybe if you're have an endorsement and you have to use some shit, it matters legally.
But
other than that, it doesn't. So
yeah, that's true. It's funny how it goes in that sense. What you said, like take the labels out, because like here we have to do that all the time. Like okay, we did this model. Mm-hmm. This is the real unit, but. Okay, let's not tell anyone. And then we invite people from the outside, like, okay, which one you like the most? This one. Okay, yep. Which one is the real unit? I don't know. Or this one. No, wrong. And then we do
okay,
like...
Okay, and tell me this. Tell me the guy that spent like $4,000 on an amp is ever going to say, yeah, that $200 thing sounds better. Fuck no.
No, fuck
if you
no.
You spent $4,000, yeah, you're going to be running that flag to the top of the pole every day.
But of course, there's some romantic stuff and also have like a... real tube amp, and of course like there's some benefits also, like you plug yourself to the amp, you turn it on and you're done. I mean, you don't need
if it matters
computer.
For the record,
yeah sure. Exactly. And of course if you're just playing or like whatever, the electrical signal is like instant. You don't get any latency from your amplifier connecting straight to your cab, right? Like voltage is like this fast. Of course if you maybe can experience some latencies, there's some benefits from both, but I guess this like war of like which one is better is over, hopefully. Like that's all I want. I love both. I'm just like, I just love the feeling of like taking the tubes out and changing them. I cannot do that even, you know. It's just fun. It's just like beautiful. It's a beautiful machine. Like but
I know that all the points I'm making here make people that don't have a clue who I am make me think I don't give a shit about anything, but no, trust me. I care when it matters, and I don't when it don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. But that's a very good spirit. I mean, sound is most important, and the result. And if you get a good result,
matters to me is when I put a sound up and I look over at the cat and he's playing his guitar more than he's talking to me because he's stoked. that is what matters to me more than what he's plugged into. Like, if you get the guy where he needs to be creative, all I care about. I don't care about anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. Exactly. That's true. And Everton. Everton. That will make you think about like the music.
They send me some stuff.
This guy's out of tune. But yeah, cool, man. So what is your next projects? Can you talk a little bit of like what's coming for you? Or like, are you producing something right now? If you can talk about it.
I mean, I'm in pre-production with Megadeth. And, you know, making songs, making stuff happen. And
well, that's actually fun. The fun part.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You know, I'm better at talking about the other stuff than, you know, hyping myself up about what I'm working on.
No, but that's fine. I mean, like, but, if it's Megadeth or not, you are in a pre-production of some music, which you said it's the fun part, right?
I'm in my happy place right now. The creative, you know, tear it down, build it up, make it awesome. So.
Okay, cool. And do you have any, like, is your calendar quite booked with customers, or you are, like, sticking with the ones that you like the most now? Can you take yourself that privilege nowadays?
Yes. Now, anybody that doesn't own a studio, I feel like, definitely has more freedom like that. And I mean, it's been like that ever since I shut my studio down. I can say no to stuff, and you know, I don't always. Sometimes I do, but usually it's based off how busy I am, whether or not I say no. Because I've learned that some things are just work. It's all good. You just do them. Make people happy.
Yeah. Cool. What else can we talk about?
What do you guys have coming new that I should be downloading soon? That's what I want to know.
Something new?
Yeah, what do you guys have new? You send me an email later.
I have to. But we are releasing something. Well, on one hand, people have been asking a lot for an update for the Nameless Suite, which doesn't have these pedals that the NTS had. We are doing that, guys. I promise we're doing that. But it's like we have been working on something that is super interesting for us that we will release very soon. So probably when this podcast is released, it's going to be done. We can talk about it. Okay, we are going to release this Pliny plugin. So it's this, you know, Pliny is an Australian guitar player that has a band. You know, this guy.
Okay. So I don't, but that doesn't mean anything.
So we did a plugin with him, and it's a plugin where you have three amps, so like one clean amp, one crunch amp, and one lead amp. And then before that, you have a compressor and overdrive pedal. And after that, you have a reverb and delay and a cab and parametric EQs for each amp. So it's the same structure than the other products that we have. So you see all the icons on top, real easy to dial in, like two knob compressor, like compression and output. That's it. So it has a makeup gain, it has fixed ratio, fixed attack and release for exactly his sound. So we kind of packed his sound into a plugin, but using like based on like real unit amps. So we grabbed a preamp from here, a power amp from somewhere there, and we put it in the code and make it work, you know? So that's a cool thing about digital, that you can, you know, like grab some guidelines from real units and get this like Frankensteins to work together. And it's really cool because you cannot do that on a fucking app. You just cannot take a transformer and put it somewhere else. But with the code, you can. So
right.
It's actually really fun because we can create amps from scratch and change parts of the preamps, change whatnot. Like, I want a fuzzier distortion. Okay, let's lower these components. Let's change the components in the code and let's make it work. So it's really actually really, really fun. So
you guys are good at it, so keep it up. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah, I hope that people take it nice because it's the first like artist product that we will do. So far, we have been working with brands, and it's like straight emulation of the real unit. So now we will continue that line, but we are starting this different line that it's more of a crafting a sound from scratch, which you can't. It's not about comparing the real unit to the thing anymore, which for me it's kind of cool. It's just like, does it sound nice or not? That's it. So, sure. So it's been really
interesting. You don't always have to be chasing like a reverb twin or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you know. I went down. Shit. All right. I think I stayed down.
Hey, we roll with it. It's all good.
Yeah. But it's been really interesting, and Pliny has been really nice. So it has been really, really easy to work with him, and he sounds great and he has great taste. So plugin is looking really elegant, and it's sounding really, really nice. So I'm excited to release that. I think that it's going to be released when we release this podcast. So yeah, that's cool. What we're working on.
I'll keep an eye out for the email downloader.
Thanks. Yeah, of course. Actually, I'm going to send you one for the beta because I need, if you want to try it out before it's released, it also helps me a lot to get some feedback.
Cool. Well, you know, I'll do it. No problem.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, it was fucking awesome to have you. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Not really. Just keep being awesome, and I'll do the same.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Hey, but if you come to Finland, let us know. Well, producers don't travel that much, but anyways, if you happen to be...
I love Finland.
Okay, cool. Are you coming any soon? No.
No.
Okay, well, invited.
As long as it's in August, I'll be there, no problem.
True that, you're not used to the snow. Yeah, it was cold this week there, but now it's fine.
It's great talking to you. Yeah, I got to get on the road. Yes. Got to go work with Dave today. So, I don't know. Have a good day. It was excellent talking to you guys, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, have you next time, man. Take care. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.